This is Decentralized, the Decentralized Trials and Research Podcast. We gather here with friends and guests to talk about the latest ways to make research and clinical trials around the world more inclusive, more accessible, more resilient, and more sustainable, all by using decentralized methods. This podcast is recorded live on Clubhouse every Friday, 12 to 1 Eastern, on the TGIF DCT show at the Decentralized Trials Club. You can join the live sessions and add your voice every Friday at noon Eastern time with the free Clubhouse app by following the Decentralized Trials Club. And of course, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform to get notified of new episodes. Following the club and subscribing will also help you stay current for any of the bonus content we may drop. And now, it's time to decentralize.
Hello and welcome for those of you that are joining us here live on TGIF DTRA, or for those of you who are joining us through our replay streaming as the Decentralized Podcast on your favorite podcast platforms. Hello, we're delighted to have you here. You've landed in TGIF DTRA, where we discuss a range of topics related to the adoption and scale of innovative approaches and clinical trials meant to improve access for all. We have different guests with us each time we gather, and those ideas for topics come from you, our friends in the listening community. So if there's a topic you'd love to see us cover, if you'd like to step forward and be a guest, just reach out and let us know. We love when folks have presentations, publications, other things they're working on that they'd like to tie in and be able to point to and amplify and get their word out, because then our audience loves to ask you questions about your work, especially when there's new data.
I'd love to be a presenter at some point.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I would love to talk about my pet peeve on the corporate practice of medicine doctrine. So that's going to be a whole different discussion.
Ooh, this is a look at this. I haven't even introduced our guest this week. He's already jockeying to come back.
It's a yes.
And he's been booked. Look at that. And for those of you that were here for the clips live that ended, we'll probably be on the cutting room floor. That's going to mean another 10 minutes of travel off battle. When Darshan does make his triumphant return, don't miss. Log in early. Be there live. Well, this is all a great setup for today's guest, Jane. I'm really thrilled to have Darshan here. Would you like to do the proper intro of Darshan and his illustrious background? Because for me, I just know him as a great voice on LinkedIn and a great character on his podcast, Darshan Talks. Turns out he has some other professional accolades along the way.
Well, I'll give it a shot, but Darshan, you chime in and correct me where I go off track. So I got to know Darshan the same way that Craig just mentioned, through LinkedIn. Then I got to listen to him at a DIA presentation about medical writing and ethics and AI. Oh, gosh, yeah, you forgot about that. And last week I had the pleasure of being in a conference setting where Darshan was speaking. Now, Darshan has a degree as a PharmD and has practiced in many different clinical settings for more than a decade. Everything, I think, from the community to the hospital. So I love that. And gosh, I don't know if you were in a compounding pharmacy.
I was.
All right. So we'll talk about GLP access later. And he's also a legal expert. And this is what I really appreciate. It's that ability to thread the needle between what happens literally at the benchtop and how are we developing drugs? How are we delivering them to patients? And then how do we do that in the framework of ever-changing policies, laws, regulations? And maybe they aren't changing, but we're just paying attention differently.
So Jane, is this like our own little, if you give a mouse a cookie, this is if you give a pharmacist a law degree, what comes out the other side?
I don't know the first reference, but yeah, I'll go with that.
Come on, I'm going to have to send you some children's books. Darshan, welcome. It's great to have you here. What did we butcher on your bio? What else should people know about who you are as we kick off?
Several different things depending on what your interest level is. But for example, if you see the books behind me, so we were having a built-in off before we started as well. And Dr. Kalali was winning that one because he apparently rents his built-ins. But he did tell us that there's some very, very impressive things in his background. So I figured I should do my show and tell. Yes. So my show and tell is the books behind me. I've written anywhere from 1 through 6 chapters in every single one of them. Everything ranging from clinical trials, drug advertising, FDA regulatory law, a pharmacy, medical devices, the Indian pharmaceutical industry, and more. If you look there, what you're seeing behind the statue of Themis is my national judo medal. So I was US number 2, India number 3 in judo. So I taught the Indian Army how to fight. I taught the Indian Central Reserve Police Force how to fight. I teach at Drexel University. I teach food and drug law. I also am on multiple editorial and advisory boards, like pretty much everyone on here. And there are a few other things, but that as part of my impending loss in the travel off, I am setting the stage for stage 2, which is weird things I have done. And I'm hoping that I have at least a chance at going up against Jane and Dr. Kalali and Dr. Lipset.
Amir, is it too late to sign up a judo master in the CNS Summit talent show?
No, I think we should. Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
And I was going to say, Darshan, I'm going traveling with you because I always go to the not Dr. Kalali approved parts of every city I visit. So I want the judo champion with me.
I have wandered through the favelas of Brazil after being told not to. We'll have a whole discussion on this, James. Yeah.
There is no shortage of things to cover today. I can see why somehow we've already booked. We're already booking Darshan in the background. We're not going to let you go, man. It is great to have you here. So clearly, you get out of the office a lot. Jane ran into you in San Francisco. I ran into you in Midtown Manhattan. And it felt like that was on the same day. So you're out there, you know, trying to spread a message. You know, talking compliance isn't always a sexy message
talking Jesus, but yeah.
So what's the burning platform on your mind? What's the headline that people need to understand and learn and spend some time going deeper about that you're out talking about today?
I think that the key thing is innovation happens, be ready for it. But just being ready for it doesn't mean sign up for everything that comes your way, because everything comes with risks and don't know what those risks are. And as long as you're willing to take those risks, I think the future is very, very bright. And ready or not, here you come. Did any of that make sense?
Jane,
you're muted, by the way.
I like that message. And this is the friction that I feel a lot in driving innovation. Like, but what about, what if, what? And so we what if ourselves right into not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
As an expert, how do you coach people to get over the what if and into the let's try?
My job is not so much to say, so the answer is twofold. So the answer is, it's not my decision to make. In the end, when you as a client of mine makes a decision, you have to live with it. It's very easy for me to say, do or don't do. It's much harder to go, I have to live with the consequences. Having said that, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, for example, the conversation we are planning to have today is on AI, for example. And on one hand, there are a ton of rules that go along with it, ton of laws, tons of regulations, tons of guidances and more. What we also don't have is clear guidance. Clear regulation. Here's what the rules of the road are. The closest thing we have is, for example, Europe, which is not binding. You've got some California rules and laws that are kicking in, but sort of still in the development stage. And the reason I say all of that is if there's a Supreme Court case, I think this was the Fox v. FCC case, and essentially came out and said, if you don't tell, if you as the agents, if you as the government don't tell someone what not to do, you can't punish them for not doing it. So, did you lose us, Jane? You're muted, by the way, again.
You're on mute, Jane.
I'm processing.
So essentially, you've got to tell someone what not to do before you punish them for it. So in that sense, from an AI perspective, from a decentralized trials perspective, you can't punish someone for following certain rules that you agency are the only one who has them in your mind. So you've got to list them out before you punish someone. You've got to be specific. And guidances don't count because guidances are non-binding. So that'd be sort of a little bit of a take. So is that responsive, Craig?
Yeah, I think that's a great start for us for jumping off here together. And especially as we kind of talk at this macro level and start to drill in around whether it's privacy concerns and even that around specific use cases. Obviously, though, you can't show up at a meeting today and get admitted unless you know the secret password of AI. And that apparently lets you into any meeting, probably gets you on stage at just about any meeting out there, it seems. But when you're out there kind of seeing and hearing the conversations around AI, and specifically for folks, say, in our audience that may be CROs or maybe research sites, what are some of the constraints that they're trying to deal with today? And what's maybe some of the areas that they have a little more latitude than they may think? For example, I'm sure so many are right out of the gate fearing, well, I can't do anything with AI with a study protocol that's handed to me. It's going to drop it into the public domain and I'm going to violate 101 confidentiality agreements. Okay, let's call that the guardrail on the right. But where is the guardrail on the left that gives people some latitude to use some of these new tools?
So whose perspective am I taking? Am I working as the lawyer for the sponsor or for the lawyer for the site?
Oh, Jane, this is
can
like
we do both?
This is like
peace.
This
yes
is like a prompt engineer, right? I get to say, hey, Darshan, take on the persona.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, let's try both. Let's have you battle yourself here.
A little bit of a schizophrenic personality, but sure. So I'll start with the sponsor side of this conversation. And Craig, you and I were, I know you had to leave early, so you didn't catch this part of my talk, but if you're a sponsor, the rules around AI are relatively unclear. And what I mean by that is, you're spending your time writing out your protocol. That protocol, you've always worked with the assumption that it is protected, it's protected IP. And the word protected IP comes in different forms. It could be a trademark, it could be, which is probably not applicable. It could be a copyright, it could be a patent, or it's sort of what's called a trade secret. For those people who don't know, a patent has to be very, very specific. It has to be novel, non-obvious, written that has to have a written description. You're probably not going to get patents off of your protocol, so that's out. So we don't have trademarks, we don't have patents, which really leaves copyrights and trade secrets. Copyrights is really more the expression of something, which means that the way you wrote out the protocol itself may be protected, but not the content of that protocol itself. So copyright probably out again, which really leaves you with trade secrets. And trade secrets, the only way they work is that no one knows what they are. Think of the Coca-Cola formula. So the only way you protect your trade secret is by not telling anyone. Now, here are the problems with that. Number one, that's all well and good, except you're going to go to clinicaltrials.gov and publish that exact trade secret. So what are you protecting? Number two, okay, maybe there's a little bit of copyright in terms of the expression. But there was the OpenAI lawsuit where it was deemed to be fair use. It was the New York Times lawsuit where New York Times was deemed to have lost the case because OpenAI said effectively that us accessing your information is fair use, and the court seemed to agree with them, which means that if that same analysis occurs, the protocol would, accessing the protocol would be fair use. And therefore, you as the pharma company have lost complete control over this IP you created. And that's problematic. So how are you protecting it? Is it just the data? And even that data now is not really protected because as we discussed before, when you talk about Europe, for example, and you talk about sort of the Yoda program project, for example, this data is available in the public domain. So as a sponsor, I'm terrified about how to protect things. So the only way I can protect things is contractually. And if you as a site are going to go out there and then just going to violate the agreement and put my data, my the only control I have, violate the contract and put it into someone else's system, and that system's going to transform my protocol and 50 others to create its own new special thing, where does that leave me? What is the IP I'm protecting? And as a sponsor, I'm not sure I feel that comfortable. So there was recently, I want to say in the last couple of days, I heard about a sponsor coming out and saying, sending a letter to all of their sites going, you will not put any of my data into any kind of online system. And that's where that came from. So first, if you're a site, respond back to me, Craig, Dr. Kalali, Jane, tell me why you as a site would go, this is not okay. And walk me through, like, fight me.
Oh, I got a use case for you. And we talked about this yesterday in a circle about AI. So the problem that many sites cite is workflow disruption when they're initiating a clinical trial and executing it. So we were brainstorming, why not feed the schedule of assessments to an AI tool that understands all of your workflows and SOPs and show you how you can make that work with less friction? But what I'm hearing from you is that might be a no-go zone.
Why do you think it's a no-go zone based on what I just said?
Maybe it's not. If it's in a private domain that isn't publicly available, you tell me.
Craig, do you agree it's a no-go zone, or do you think it's okay?
Well, I think if the use case is involving them uploading this this study protocol, even if it is just for the use case of having them support their workflow, the question on my mind is, what's the system that you're uploading to, and what are the controls that you have around that? Because a site does upload the protocol. They might upload it to their CTMS vendor platform that may be in the cloud. Sometimes that CTMS vendor that's supporting the site might have its own tools that are parsing the protocol to auto-configure a study in the CTMS. And so I'm not sure I see it as radically different from other systems into which a site might be uploading the protocol. Is it one that they control and one that they have confidence in understanding where and how the data is being used? So, for example, I don't know if site CTMS vendors are trying to use the data on the back end that sites are uploading. I'm assuming that a site needs to know their user agreements and data privacy rules with any of their platforms, including those that may be using AI.
Dr. Kalali, do you want to add to that before I jump back?
No, go ahead. I'll have comments later, but you respond to that. Yeah.
Okay. I think you had a great point there, both Jane and Craig, where you talk about control becomes a primary factor in that. Are you actually aware of what you're putting up into the cloud? Is it the cloud or is it your local server? And chances are, I don't know too many sites who are smart enough and IT adept enough to be using local servers. So I'm going to push back on this fictional reality of, sites are smart enough to do this at a local server level. I'm not buying that, even at a large academic institution level. So let's keep that out of the way. The second thing you mentioned, and I didn't get into, we just talked intellectual property a few seconds ago, but Craig, you hinted at this. Where does the data go and whose data is it? And I'm talking about things like HIPAA, talking about things like GDPR. I'm talking about things like CCPA, CPRA, which is California versions, but every state of the 50 states, there are probably about 25, if not more, probably more, that have their own version of privacy laws. Washington's a beast to deal with. My health, my data law, for example. You then combine that with a global clinical trial and you've got exposure because China, and there have been cases of this, this is not me literally picking on China, this is the cases that have popped out, that China is accessing this data. And the DOJ, so it used to be just the FDA, OCR, HIPAA kind of issues. The DOJ has come out and said, we are worried about China hacking into this data, and we consider this data of patients to be very, very confidential. We don't want that data going out. So that creates its own adverse event problems, like how do you report things back to them? But there's something called the bulk data rule. That's a new rule that came out in the last 3 months. That changes everything we have to do. And I can tell you most privacy lawyers don't even know it exists. You then add on to that, you layer on to this, this element of what's called the Biosecure Act, which was not passed a couple of months ago, but Biosecure Act 2.0 is being worked on as we speak, which means data going to China, again, that vulnerability, that accessibility is going to be potentially compromised. So you've taken that AI initial layer of intellectual property and you go, I have concerns. And then you layer on these privacy rules on top of that. And it's just messy. And it's easy to go, well, I think we can figure it out. And you're right, you possibly could, but at what price? And if you're the sponsor, am I willing to trust you, small site, to be able to thread that needle? And I would think that I might be able to trust, say, a Mount Sinai to do that. And I'm not even convinced that's true. I'm picked on Mount Sinai mostly because they're a big reputable hospital. I know nothing more about them in this specific instance. Having said that, I'm not trusting a small independent site owned by a CRA for multiple reasons, including the fact that they typically won't have those controls in place, which means my IP is now available to the public. So unless I sponsor, you're muted by the way, Craig. Do you want to say something? Oh.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think round one is going to go to the Big Pen company and sticking things on paper and notepads. But
can I weigh in? Because I'm thinking now about the recipient of the letter. Okay, so the sponsor issued the letter. Let's say the sponsor says, you can't upload my data places that I don't approve. If, let's be honest, the person who opens that letter is probably somebody, an admin, who then might take it to a CRC, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm a CRC. Well, I'm like, I don't know what the heck this means, but it's a no.
Yeah.
Right. So this is one of those things that I think is a true element of friction. We don't talk enough about it. It's like, okay, the no is the easy answer. And if I don't feel like I'm qualified to answer, then no is my out. How much do you see of that, Darshan?
I don't usually get that person calling me going, let's solve it, because they have much bigger fish to fry than reach out back to the sponsor going, hey, we think we have a way around this. Now, if you are a sponsor, there are ways to address this. For example, you can create your own local server that's going to have its own AI, that's going to transform and do blah, 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 blah. But are you as a sponsor incentivized to do any of that? Why would you bother? But the point to the point you're making, Jane, I am not getting those calls from small site ABC going, I want to use AI. Tell me how to. Not because they don't have the need, but because of two things. Number one, I'm going to do it anyway and just not tell anyone and deal with the consequences. Or I don't know any better and I don't have the time to fight this one. So it's easier to just shut down that part of it. And number three, I already have the systems to do that. I've always been doing that. I was trying to make my life easier Okay, maybe not this one. We'll try something else later on. Does that line up with your reality?
So, Darshan, I'll just say a couple of things. For Please. People worrying about China having access, they have everything already. The other thing.
I know.
So that's really kind of bad. That's a bit too late for anything. The other thing is a quick question for you, completely off topic. How long would it take, do you think, an ex-pharma person to train in becoming a lawyer to be able to do what you do?
3 years, but to do what I do,
not as good as you. I just mean pretend.
No, I'm trying to go. I'm trying to answer. To become a lawyer is about 3 years.
Yeah.
The do what I do. I know food and drug lawyers.
Yeah.
And we all have our own little niches. I don't know anyone in my niche. That's what I'm. Yeah. I'm going.
Oh, I meant general industry. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. I'd probably say about 5-7 years.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is, you know, from what you describe with all the layers of laws and the new ones coming, it seems to me that your job is about as stable and protected going forward as anyone in industry. So if someone's looking at all the thousands of people being laid off, to have a job will never run out of things to do. I think retraining in law might be a thing for them to think about.
You don't think there's a Darshan bot out there for me?
There is a Darshan bot out there. In fact, Darshan uses a bot as well, because the truth is it's going to identify 4 things and I'm going to go, you missed these other 4 that I know. And then I'm going to have a conversation with the client and go, here are 3 more things that the client just didn't tell me about. And together, that's really the problem set we're facing. So for example, I'm doing due diligence on like CROs, for example, and I'm going, you know what? Talk to me a little bit about if you're importing drug from China to do this clinical trial, what does your tariff process look like? Or do I have to worry about it? That was not a question I asked 3 months ago. You then go, okay, I'm going to I was planning on doing a study in Europe. Does that make sense? Between the AI laws, the fact that I can't get data back out. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Oh, but you know what? China has a really good list of like subjects that I could probably test on between the US Biosecurity Act, between the privacy laws, between the bulk data rule, probably not where I want to go. What about India? India's great. You know what? They've got a lot of people as well. The fact is that they have a new privacy law that no one's really enforcing yet, but could. And the fact that they, since about 2014, they've struggled with their clinical trials industry. I'm not saying that none of these can be fixed, but this is sort of knowing your issue spotting. And I love what I do. How cool is it that I get to sit down here, talk to 3 incredibly smart people and go, here's what I'm seeing with really great background closets.
And Darshan, how do lawyers in general, but you in particular in this area, how do you keep up?
So I read an obscene amount. So right now, I try to put out as much. If I read 50, I try to put out 4. And what I mean by that is, excuse me, I had way too much soda when I started this conversation, so I had to be awake. So if you look at what I put out on a weekly basis, I put out 4 videos and I put out 7 newsletters with content in each one of them. And I'm ready for the next 4 weeks already. And that's not even touching the amount of content I really read. There's a company called Feedly, for those people who are aware of them. Yeah. So Feedly reached out to me, I want to say, I don't know, 10 years ago. And they said, how big is your team? Because your team is consuming data that we haven't seen in a long time. I said, my team is me. That's how much I'm reading. I read about 1,000 blogs and I keep up on it. That's the only way ahead. And I'm reading just Feedly stuff that I'm getting Mondac, that I'm getting Law 360. And my job is to go, here's everything that's going on and here's how they all interact. And you didn't think of this Law 360 when you wrote this article, but here's something else that's going on that probably ties in. So that's my job and I love it. Is that responsive?
That's wonderful. No, and it's really good to see you enjoy that and be able to provide that service and connect the dots. That's phenomenal. Yeah, love it.
Thank you. You're very kind. And Dr. Kalali will get a check in the mail for the publicity.
I can't afford you.
I can't afford you either. Works out great.
Darshan gives coupons.
We talk about accumulators nowadays, just to be clear. But yes, go ahead, Greg.
Jane, do you want to flip yes. us over to talking about inspections, maybe? I know this is a topic coming up
do,
at the DGRA.
Do we not want to switch sides? I thought I had to battle myself.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Hold on. Let me. Okay. We'll ring the bell. Let's have Darshan take on Darshan.
Okay. So you know what? Abel opponent, but he hasn't thought through all of the issues. What my veritable opponent that I trust has not considered the reality of managing a clinical trial site. A clinical trial site is an active organism that has to consider its own environment. It's great to sit in those ivory towers as a sponsor and come up with these new policies that everyone's got to follow, except you are saying that I'm a 1099 contractor. So which means you cannot direct me on what my actual processes are. What does that actually mean? That means that the level of control you can exert over me is limited at best. If not, you really should call me an employee. And do you want to go down that path? Because you probably don't. Okay, so you're not going to go down that path. So what are my options now? My options are we develop own policies and procedures. And those policies and procedures will control and demonstrate that we have control over the IP. And let's take the IP element. My opponent, Darshan, was kind enough to point out that OpenAI won that fair use case. What he's not pointing out, this is really schizophrenic, by the way, but what he's not pointing out is the fact that there was also the Anthropic case that came out right after. And the Anthropic case had Anthropic paying $1.6 billion, if I remember correctly, which means that there is copyright protection that is available. So you point to the fact that you can protect the intellectual property, but there's proof that you can. Then you take on the fact that, as was pointed out earlier, what is it that we're actually trying to protect? Because if you're trying to protect the protocol, we're agreeing that the protocol is going to be published on whether it's clinicaltrials.gov, UDRA-CT, or something else. So from that perspective, you can't really protect that. So is it the data we're trying to protect? In which case, I'm not putting the data into the cloud anyways, so that doesn't matter. So what? And if I was, the EHR already has that data. So what exactly am I protecting there? So you as a sponsor need to have an overall plan. I mean, I'm putting this stuff into Athena. I'm putting it into all these, what's the other one? The big ones, I'm blanking on it. Epic.
Epic, Cerner, yeah.
Epic, Cerner, there you go, thank you. So whether it's Epic, Cerner, Athena, whatever, that data is already in there. So if your concern is that this data, and it probably is using AI anyways. So who am I protecting it against? Because if you're telling me I can't use Epic, I can tell you right now, I can't do the study. If you're telling me I can't use Cerner, I can't use Athena, I can't do the study. So is your concern that it's just other vendors? In which case, let's address that question. So from an IP and from a privacy. Now, privacy is a fair point, right? The privacy is you're not putting my data out there, but it's in a controlled environment, but people's privacy has been protected the whole time. So what you really need is an API connected to my vendor, to my EHR vendor, to collect the data. So that sounds like a you problem, not a me problem. So what is the problem exactly? Was that schizophrenic enough?
That's amazing. And did you know that Dr. Kalali is a psychiatrist? Just
I did not know that.
I would like to point out we call it people with schizophrenia now.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Okay.
So, but in the context you're using, yes, you use an adjective, I realize. Darshan, you said earlier, you know, what's interesting is just to broaden it just for a minute. You said it'd be great to have clarity, you know, you have to kind of, we've never really had that. But I think with the current environment, it seems the AI companies are very influential and going to be for the next couple of years in terms of pushing for deregulation, their ability to basically rip whatever they want from whoever they want without consequence. That seems to be the kind of macro environment. that may change in a couple of years' time, right? You swing the other way. But in that kind of unclear environment where also governmental action is not really predictable at the moment in any way, how do you think that's going to impact just innovation in general, people being willing to take a risk? Is it, oh, it's no one's really paying attention, I could just do stuff, or is it more, I'm going to freeze because really nobody knows what's going to come next?
I think it comes out to a few different answers. I think the first answer is going to be the U.S. government has been very clear, specifically under the Trump administration, that AI is a priority for them. Because if they don't win the AI race, China does. And if China wins the AI race, many argue that that's the big race. You can't lose this one. So I expect that there will be a lot of forgiveness being granted as opposed to permissions being taken. So that would be my first initial thought.
Yeah.
The second element of this is, if you don't, what does enforcement look like? The government is not a single monolithic entity, which means that today's government is different from the government four years from now, more likely than not, unless President Trump decides to run again. And that's not a political statement, just to be clear. But whatever, and the Trump administration would argue that they change literally on a pretty routine basis, that the rules keep changing. So we will more likely than not see a federal AI law that comes out pretty quickly. The Trump administration has said that they want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You then add in another layer of, let's say that federal AI law comes or does not come into play. States will probably do some version of that themselves. And then what people are not thinking of, and this is the more likely scenario that's being played out as we speak, old laws will be repurposed into new AI laws. And I see this all the time. For example, in privacy, people have been focusing on your HIPAA and your sort of your CPRA and CCPA and all that stuff. But the biggest area people are actually being sued is none of those. It's actually federal wiretapping laws. So the idea that I'm listening into a conversation is a violation of privacy. And that's actually your number one lawsuits in the country right now. So in the same way, someone's going to go out there and say, you were looking at these AI laws, waiting for them and nothing happened. But here's this entire new set of laws that we think we can repurpose for AI purposes and see enforcement around that. And I would be surprised if we don't see that in the next few months, if not years. So is that responsive?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think it's kind of interesting seeing the macro environment and how that might impact how people think about risk and what they can and cannot do. Yeah.
I expect that what's going to happen is... And Dirk was actually, I think, when we were at the SOS meeting, Dirk was the one who raised this. And he shout out to Dirk about this, where he's like, at a certain point, people got comfortable with bring your own devices. So why wouldn't they get comfortable with the risk associated with bring your own AI? As you can tell, I can be schizophrenic. I can be a person with schizophrenia about this and give you both sides of that discussion. However, I think there's a overall argument to be had. And that overall argument is there's a transformation that occurs. And is that transformation problematic? And if it's problematic, the question is it a derivative work, which is what the term is used in copyright? Or is it a completely new thing that had nothing to add? I'm going to let Craig guide this. I feel like I'm now just doing soliloquy, so I apologize for that. Craig, oh,
I point out something that I'm just
please
filtering my information feeds, which is a trademark, right? But here's what I'm seeing that is confusing.
Okay.
We see some laws that are getting repurposed. We see some areas where there aren't laws. Then we see some laws that have not changed, but the enforcement actions have.
Mm-hmm.
I think a few letters were issued last week about pharmaceutical
little
advertising.
bit, a little bit. A few, I think a few thousand, if I remember correctly, but yes.
Yeah. And so, as a site, I'm going back to the site persona. How the heck do you navigate being inspection ready and feeling confident that the inspectors know how what counts is what they're measuring or looking for?
I don't think I understand your question. What counts as what they're measuring and looking for? Explain what
Well,
you mean by that.
are their lenses changing as these policies change? First, there's the whole tech readiness aspect, but then there's the how do I actually retrace the data through all the privacy nuances in this new domain? Are they ready? Do we know what they're looking for? And how do sites get ready for that?
So a few different responses to that. The question is, who is asking the question? So for example, if the FDA came in and said, tell me about your privacy program, my first response would be, why do you care? Because FDA, that's not your jurisdiction. Except that's more often than not who's going to inspect you. The IRB could maybe ask that question. I'd go, maybe I need to look into it a little bit closer because IRBs technically don't get their jurisdiction the same way. But I'd be curious. I'm not an IRB expert. I'm familiar, obviously, with them, but I've never looked at the actual source that gives them authority over privacy. But let's assume that they have authority over privacy. And shout out to Edie. She's an expert on this. She talks about this all day. But the second level of analysis that goes along with it is, the DOJ, which is not someone you think about, has pointed out in 2021 that was it Craig or Jane who had me? Maybe neither of you heard me talk about. I do a whole presentation on just lawsuits involving clinical trials, because no one has done that presentation as far as I know. And in the last 5 years, there have been CRAs, PIs, pharmacists, nurses who've all gone to jail. There's this guy, Sammy Anwar. Have you guys heard of Sammy? Don't be like Sammy. Sammy's currently serving 28 years in jail, for clinical research fraud. So, would you like to?
But I thought it was always someone in Florida, or is it the same
Not
thing?
always someone in Florida. Florida does seem to help, though. But would you like me to bring up Sammy Anwar's case just to show you guys?
Sure.
Oh, give me a second.
It's so funny you say this because I remember going through my first 5 days of GCP training when I worked at a big pharma sponsor and walking out of that thinking, I can't do this work without going to jail.
Okay, I'm gonna share my screen.
Well, I think your cases you're going to see, Jen, you'll see why they're so outrageous that, they ended up in jail. I
This is
thought
from the DEA.
I was in danger of you doing anything like
I
that.
haven't been in jail yet.
I've been to jail, but not as a person serving. But he's serving. So this sort of gives you a feel for clinical research fraud is a real thing. But there are multiple cases like that. And the DOJ has said that they are targeting clinical research fraud, just to be clear. And Health and Human Services has said that they're targeting clinical research fraud. And the Trump administration has come out and said that they're targeting healthcare fraud. So don't expect it to go away anytime soon.
So, what
Sorry,
would
Jane.
be the first? I don't know. There are probably 17 items on their list, but where do you think their priorities are on that fraud line right now from a clinic? Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah, but why don't I solve ask DOJ False Claims Act. Give me a second. I'm trying to pull up the answer for you specifically. Let's
So I think, Jane, the example that I'll show you, these are cases where there were sites that literally made up data,
Well,
right?
this one did. This
Yeah,
one very much did.
so that's kind of, you can imagine. So this isn't someone not
And
complying.
I've dealt with that in big pharma organizations,
Yeah.
but no one went to jail.
This is just their coordination group. This is what they're saying, that this fraud, the working group is going to focus on.
So Darshan, for folks that are audio only, for any replay, give us your voiceover.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize that there's. I thought it was video.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me. Essentially, what they're coming out and saying is that, pricing is an area of focus for them. Kickbacks are going to be an area of focus for them. So when we talk about kickbacks, we're talking about, are you overpaying? So everyone's talking about how sites are being underpaid, and that PIs need to be paid better, and that, you know what, as much money as they can get is probably where we want to go. Yeah, that may be considered to be a kickback. And this is an area related to drugs, medical devices that are paid by federal healthcare programs. It is an area of focus for these sites, for the government to go after. So there are any EHR records, manipulation of EHR records is going to be an area. Materially defective medical devices that impact patient safety. So if your clinical trials are impacting patient safety, which they probably are, it's an area of focus. So is that responsive?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does that scare the bejesus out of people?
Maybe not yet, but I would like to actually double down on this in our next round. In the next round, like the next time you come back.
Oh, am I coming back again? Okay, I thought I'd be banned right after this conversation. Dr. Kalali, you're muted.
I feel like these are different buckets, right? You got the outright fraud, people who are making up data, versus I think where most of our conversation is, which is the ambiguity for people to understand how they can innovate without bumping against some compliance, right? So those are obviously very different buckets.
Sort of. There are varieties and shades, if you will. Mm-hmm. So, for example, have you guys looked at ORI, Office of Research Integrity? ORI has settlements against everyone from Harvard to Moffitt Clinic to, I think Stanford was on there, like all of your big hospitals. It comes down to, for example, what kind of grants you're getting and what kind of promises you're making and where the source of that money going. One would argue that's not outright fraud, except you promise it'd be used for one thing and you're using it for another. And that was deemed to be fraud enough to be publicly shamed. You then combine that with the new ORI rules related to I'm sorry, I'm going to frame this badly, but essentially there was a new finalized rule that came out that said that sites need to rejigger their entire appeal process if there's an allegation of research fraud. And in those scenarios, there will be public naming, shaming, and blaming of PIs, even if it's unproven, until such time it is proven. So you're almost guilty until proven innocent. And that's a federal, it came out on the Federal Register and everything. So you, and I've represented clients in those spaces, and it's not a fun place to be. It's painful. And it's difficult. So to the point you're making, Dr. Kalali, the fact is that, yes, there is the easy wins of, you know what, it's an opioid, you are making up data, you are hoarding pills, all of which, I'm not sure what the note taker is saying, fair enough, all of which would be problematic. But then there are these other gradations along the way, all of which are getting targeted in different ways. And AI may not be the biggest barrier to go after right now. However, if the Trump administration wants to make a point about the fact that your data was exposed and China got it, because as you pointed out, Dr. Kalali, the fact is that China can get it and probably has it, but who am I going to blame? I'm going to blame someone who probably made that data accessible or at least didn't have the right controls in place. I'm going to make an example out of you. And that's how that plays itself out.
Well, as I broke the news to a family member concerned about their medical data going to China, that's where we're going to be going for care and for medical breakthroughs anyway. So if anything, it'll make our care administered in China a little more coordinated, since they'll already have our data before we get there. But that can be a topic for our third installment with Darshan
yeah.
in this new series. of not letting him go. Any last words, folks? Jane, Amir, Darshan, before we tie things up here?
I didn't realize I was dying to put out last words, but no, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. This was amazing. A lot of fun. I apologize for going on to these diatribes and engaging in soliloquy. So I appreciate your patience with all of it.
Oh, I can't wait to remix that entire segment in the Darshan v. Darshan battle. We'll remix it into a lovely debate.
Just before we close, Darshan, what I found fascinating is you were very optimistic in your very beginning, and you kind of seems say, you know, the future's bright. How do you keep that attitude when you discuss all these things, the ways that people can go to jail and everything you do might get you into trouble with some government acronym? How do you balance those two things?
Very simple, because when forewarned is forearmed. So if I know what the problems are, I can fix them. Or no one knows how to fix them, in which case it's not a problem. Because
see, as a psychiatrist, I think Amir was looking for psychedelics.
Well, that's another episode, really. Yeah. Can you be held accountable if your fraud is committed while you're under the influence of a psychedelic?
Yes, if you gave yourself a psychedelic.
Yeah.
Darshan, your optimism is only matched by your depth of knowledge and the pleasure of having conversation with you. I'm so glad we were finally able to coordinate this and make this happen today. Folks, make sure they're following Darshan on LinkedIn. He's got a great voice there. And if you like what you hear and you want to tip the waiter, go ahead and listen to Darshan Talks as well. Some great content there, a great community that he brings along with really a fun, wide range of expertise around compliance, legal, other considerations, and clearly packaged in a much less boring binder than you might have expected when you see the headline.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
What a
Thanks
pleasure.
For being here.
Thanks, all.
Bye-bye.